podcast, where we discuss everything contemporary Christian fiction. Hang out with me, Jennifer Sienis, as authors share their writing journeys, the inspiration for their novels, and give y'all a behind-the-scenes view of a writer's life. Believe it or not, it's not as easy as you might think. Hello. Today we are here with women fiction author Lee Lincoln, and she is the author of the Broken Road series. And she has so much to say. We've been chatting away and I keep having to say, you know what, let's save that for the podcast. Let's save that for the podcast. So I'm going to get off of here and just let her talk because she's got a lot to say. So Lee, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit, tell a little bit about yourself, talk about how you got started writing, because that's the real key to what is happening with your series here. And then I'll just shut up for a while.
Okay. So my first book, Road Home, I wrote in 2016. And it was a passion project. And actually, I didn't even intend to write a novel. I was a cranky middle-aged woman who just no one was really listening to because I didn't have the right experience. I didn't have the right degree. I was a woman. And I just got to the point where I just was very frustrated. So I just sat down one night and just started pouring my heart out. And I did that for like 3 months. And I looked at it, at what I had written over the course of 3 months, and I was like, hey, I could turn this into something. And so it became a novel, my first novel, Road Home. And so I decided to publish it to help people understand homelessness from the perspective of a homeless woman. So it's written in first person. And I put it out there as a passion project, not expecting really to sell very many copies, but hoping to get people to really understand homelessness and to raise some money for charity. And if I sold 10 copies, I would have been happy. And it actually did really well, which just kind of boggled my mind. But when God moves, God moves. So I just kind of moved with it and was just shocked at the kind of reception it got.
Let me break in real quick. Let me ask you a question. I'm thinking about it. So you, are you indie published then?
Yeah, I am, because I did talk to a publisher back in 2016, but they wanted me to water down it so much that the heart of it would have been gone. And I was just like, no. And someone said, well, hey, Amazon will let pretty much any idiot publish. And I'm like, I qualify.
That's a little harsh on yourself. But I had listened to a podcast you did with another interviewer on a different podcast. And I remember you saying that part of the reason that they wanted you to water it down as a Christian novel is because there is some foul language in there. And you're trying to keep the heart of the truth of that, of what's going on in this environment.
Correct. Yes. Yes, there is. Yeah, I don't feel it's necessary to sanitize language, because before someone meets Christ, they are not pretty, they are not perfect, and they certainly are not going to be using churchy words, and that is an issue. And all of my books are like this. They're rude, they're snarky, they're mean, and they do use foul language. And I still to this day get people who email me who say I need to not publicly say my books are Christian because of the language issues. And I'm like, I'm not going to change, because this is real life.
Right.
People aren't perfect. And if you cannot understand that before a person meets Christ, they are not perfect, then you have no right to say you're a Christian, because we need to go out to the masses and talk to everyone, not just the pretty people. Even after
we're saved, we're not perfect. We still fail, you know?
Exactly.
We need the grace every day.
And so I'm not going to water it down. I'm not going to make it pretty. I'm not going to make it. Yeah, I'm not going to change, because these are the way people really are. People are snarky. People are rude. People look down on Christians because Christians expect things from non-Christians that they cannot do.
Well, and your audience too. You have to look at your audience, Lee. Your audience, you're trying to bring reality to what the homeless suffer through. That's the audience that you have. So if you're a Christian author who is telling a uplifting story about, you know, something else, it might be appropriate to watch, you know, your languaging or whatever. But in what you're doing, you're just trying to show reality.
Exactly. And like I get a lot of people, because there's one point in the book where the character talks about how they'll preach to you for an hour before they'll give you a meal. Jesus didn't do that. He fed them before he preached to them. We've got it switched around. And I've been in enough shelters now. I've seen this happen where they expect people who are starving to sit there and listen to a message before they'll feed them. That's not what Jesus did. And I get people who send me emails going, well, how could you say that in your book? Because that's just
true.
And I'm like, because I've seen it enough. I know it happens. We as Christians have got it wrong. And in America, we've got it wrong. And no, you cannot. And people are like, but they need to hear the word. I'm like, yeah, but not when they're starving. So,
well,
yeah,
Jesus was about
get into trouble.
They forget about relationship. I mean, it starts with relationship. It starts with showing the grace of Jesus. That's where
right.
It starts. It doesn't start with pounding. You know, Jesus says he came to serve, not to be served. And he came to save the broken, not to, you know, feed off of those that are already think they're righteous. Those are the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the people that think they're all that. And that's part of the problem, is we need our eyes open to be the reality and not look our nose down on the less fortunate, because it's not pretty. A lot of us, myself included, have been guilty of that, of, you know, we judge without seeing the soul of the person. We're not looking at the soul. We're looking at their circumstances. And that's not the same thing at all. That's not
right.
Who Jesus sees.
Right.
So if we're really filled with the Holy Spirit, if we're really working out of the work of the Spirit, if we're really that connected to Christ, then we will act as Christ acts, not as we as flawed people will act. You have to work through the Spirit.
Exactly. And I've talked to so many people, they are willing to donate to a homeless shelter or to a soup kitchen, but they won't sit down and have a conversation with a homeless person. And it's like, what's wrong with you? There's nothing wrong with sitting down and having lunch with a homeless person. Just sit down, listen to their story. I do this all the time. I'm out there all the time. I go to craft shows and I'm standing there and I'm having a great conversation with a total stranger. And in 5 seconds, I know their life story. I haven't sold them a book because I'm not trying to. I'm just listening to where they are right now. And especially since COVID, I'm hearing these stories about people who have never been this close to homelessness, but because of COVID and now the economy, they are 2 inches away from ending up homeless because they never were paycheck to paycheck and now they are. And you know, it's kind of ridiculous, number one, because of the situation our country has ended up. But you know, I'm hearing this all the time. And yet these are people that 5 years ago would never have been in this position. And now they're like, oh, I totally get these feelings. I totally get where some of these people are. And now I'm the one sitting in a soup kitchen because I can't feed my family, you know? And these are people that never, never would have sat with a homeless person or sat in a soup kitchen, but now they have to. And
right. By the grace of, you know, other aside from the grace of God, we could all be in that same exact situation. We don't know.
That's the thing. And this is one of my big issues, is the war on poverty that the government has waged more than 50 years ago now. It's an absolute failure because it took away responsibility, personal responsibility, and it took the churches out of the equation. And this is what went wrong. And now poverty levels have skyrocketed. The war on poverty was an absolute failure. We need to go back to ministering to our neighbors one-on-one, because that's
absolutely
what it used to be before the government got involved. We need to sit down with our neighbors. Hey, are you okay today? Do you need help? Where are you in your journey? Can I help you? Can I support you? Because this is what we used to do as a country. We no longer do this.
Wow.
Churches used to get involved. Churches no longer do.
Well, I won't, you can't say no, that's putting a generalization on all churches. The church as a whole, that may be true. There are individual
yes.
churches
and,
that
and
are
like I say,
absolutely
I'm
no
talking broad. There are
right.
some churches that are great, but broadly, the American church has stepped back and said, hey, it's not our job anymore.
Well, we were just, my husband and I were just talking about that this morning because he is a chaplain for the Billy Graham Rapid Response Team. And he was just down in Selma, Alabama for a week, helping with the tornado damage down there. And when he came home, he said, yeah, here were these young men that were gathered together from various different churches in their area in Ohio. And they had put together this group of people, like a Facebook group, but bigger for their community to reach out to people that need help, to go one-on-one, to, you know, and so it's sparked all these ideas in his mind. So I think you're right. I think that we need to be involved in our community. It's imperative that we get involved in our community and not, you know, some people are living behind gated, you know, communities and they're all safe and perfect, but we need to get down and dirty. We need to get where it really is. Our church happens to be in the poorest part of our town. So we see that all around us, you know, just the devastation and the people that are really suffering. So you have to be in that, the trenches, to really truly appreciate it. And we have to have a softening of the heart to allow God to really work through us. Otherwise, what's the point of being a Christian? Just because you're saved, that's a minimum. That's the minimum.
Right. Yeah. And we are to go out into all the world.
We are.
Yeah. We aren't supposed to just sit in our comfy little pews and just listen. We are to act on our faith. The Rich Mullins songs, faith without works is like a swing door in a submarine. So, you know.
There's a good Southernism right there. So, I want to ask you, because you talked a little bit about how you travel a lot, you know, and I was pointing out to Lee, those of you listening, that most writers are introverts and we are just in our little bubble writing away, and having to do a book signing is torture for us. But you get out, you're an extrovert, you get out and you meet the masses. So I'd like to know how you go about doing that. Where do you find these things to go to? You know, you said earlier you go to craft fairs. Are you crafty? Do you have crafts, or are you just showing up with your books? Where do you find these things?
I just show up with my books, set up a table, and I have a giant poster with all my book covers on it. And I just say, hi, you want to hear about my books? Or can I ask about your day? And people are just like licking me like I'm purple because I'm the only author in the area. I go to craft shows. I go to Irish festivals. I've been to a, let's see, I do holiday markets. I do, I'm going to do a women's fair in Arizona in May. I'll do anything that anyone will let me set up a table at. Yeah.
And how do you find these places? How do you find these events to go to?
There are several websites that list every event, Evently, where the shows are. There's all kinds of websites that you can find out where all the shows are. Yeah, I do seafood events. I do home shows. I do, like I say.
So you just contact whoever's in charge and say, hey, I'd like to set up a table with my books. Can I come? And they just.
Yeah, and I occasionally get a no because they're just like, yeah, why?
What's the point?
Yeah. And sometimes I do really well. I sell a lot of books, and sometimes I do really horrible and don't sell a single book, but I've talked to a bunch of people and I've heard a lot of stories, and that's okay.
That's
and
good for
as,
you.
As I joke with a lot of people, even if I don't sell a single book, hey, whatever you've told me can and will be used in a story later.
It's inspiration. Awesome.
So
share a little bit about your personal background, because there is something you bring into all of your books because of your own personal background.
Right. Most of my books, three of my books have a single mother, because I was a single mother. So I accidentally put in single mother characters because, well, I was a single mom. So it's just kind of, yeah, me. I raised my son by myself. I homeschooled. There's nothing like being a single mother and trying to homeschool. I'm just saying that's a ride and a half. And my son is now an adult, and doing
So
very
you
well.
raised a child on your own while you're homeschooling. How in the world did you support yourself? I mean, if I, you don't have to answer, I'm just curious, huh?
Jobs. Odd jobs,
Odd
mostly.
jobs.
Yeah, it was not easy. But we managed. I did whatever it took to make sure that my son had what he needed when he needed it, and that he got the best education possible, because I do not believe in public school. So, and a lot of people thought we were absolutely nuts. But I can survive on very little, and I'm not one of these people who believes in debt. And
You.
so yeah, we just kind of chugged along, and we do very well.
Well, good for
And
you.
my son will probably disagree with me on this, but because he didn't have whatever all the other kids had, because I didn't think it was necessary to have the latest toy or the biggest house or the big TV, because priorities, So my son learned really early what is a need and what is a want.
That's
And
important. Too many people do not, that lesson is not taught well enough. And you see people just overabundance to their children. And then the next thing you know, you have these kids that have these entitlement issues and they don't think they should have to work for anything. It's
And my son worked hard. He had odd jobs himself, starting at a very young age, because I wanted him to have a work ethic. And he complained about it all the time. And I was just like, well, you'll appreciate this at some point in the future.
And did he? I mean, he's grown now. I mean, you
Yes, because he has a good job. He's self-supporting, unlike a lot of 20-somethings.
yeah.
So I think he does, but it was a tough road, and but it was not one I regret, even though it was very difficult. And so even now, when I talk to other single mothers, when I'm out in the community and I talk to women, a lot of women are just looking at me like, oh, I would never do that. What, you're insane. I struggle daily. How did you do this? And I'm just like, well, the big thing is knowing the difference between a need and a want. And these women are going, but I have to have. And I'm like, do you really have to have? And they're looking at me like, but, and I'm like, no. If you're saying but, then that is a want. That is not a need.
Right.
And so,
Yeah, it's a hard lesson for a lot of people. A lot of people in our country, especially, we have so much abundance.
I think because we're raised in this country to think we need everything when we really don't, it's a struggle. And we see everyone around us having all of this stuff, like my son did. My son saw all of his friends with all this stuff that he never got, and it was hard for him, and I understood that, but I felt the priority was him, which is why I homeschooled rather than working full time.
Well, and
And
then on top of that, that shaped your character to be who you are today, and with a heart for the people that you have today, that goes into your writing. That's a ministry for you. I mean, it's all, I think we so easily forget that we're not here for us. We were put on this earth. God created us for His glory, not for our glory, for His good, not for our good.
Yeah, because I spent so much time with the homeless, even when my child was small. And so he saw people who had even less than us. So, he saw the gamut. He saw his friends that had 10 million more stuff than us. And then he saw people who had less than us. So, he did see it all, but he still struggled with this whole issue of, why do we have so little? Why don't you work more? And I was stretched really thin, even with what I was doing.
I can
So
imagine.
because I thought the ministry part was important. I thought, working with the homeless and all of my charity work was important, and he was important, and there's only one of me.
So when you talk about your I mean, we all talk as writers about a marketing strategy. We're all supposed to have a marketing strategy. And you being an indie author, you get to choose and pick, you know, when you work for a publisher, you don't, that luxury kind of is taken from you, but for a reason, you know, you're not just earning for yourself, you're earning for somebody else. And that's the trade-off. But what would you say is your marketing strategy? Do you market your book anywhere other than when you travel around? Are you on Facebook? What else do you do?
I have a newsletter. I have a blog. I have a website. I'm on YouTube, just recently on YouTube. Let's see. And of course, I do all these events.
But you got to get people to actually listen. You got to get people on that newsletter.
Yeah.
You got to get people on your blog. You got to get people on YouTube. Having them doesn't really.
Yeah. In the back of my books, there's a way you can sign up for my newsletter, and I do author swaps with BookFunnel and Story Origin, and so that's pretty much my marketing, and it's kind of worked for me.
And you are Amazon. Well, people can follow you as an Amazon author, right?
Right. Yeah. I actually sell more books off of my website than off of
Really?
Amazon,
How
which
do you
is
get,
really weird.
It is, because how do you get people? Well, it's not really, because if when you're trying to compete with a gazillion books that are on Amazon, you know, but when people are going to your website and they're reading your story, it's more personal to them. It's different.
Right.
You're not competing with a lot of people.
Yeah. And I just started listing my audiobook on my website as well, which, because there's now a way I can sell my audiobook directly. So my first audiobook, Road Home, is available on my website, and that the third one will be soon. The second one won't be, because that is a dual voice story, and so it'll be available only on Amazon for a little while longer. But I did.
Did you do your own audiobook?
I did for the first one. I will be for the third and fourth one. The second one was done by two actors, because it's a dual voice story, and I wanted a male and a female voice. So it was done by two actors. So it's available on Amazon. And it'll soon be available, hopefully, on my website as well. But there's a way I can directly sell audiobooks through my website. So, which is really cool too. So
You're
like
cutting
I
out
say,
the
I
middleman. You're cutting out the middleman.
Cutting out the middleman. And because of that, I think that's part of the reason why I sell more off of my website than off of Amazon. That you can buy the ebooks on Amazon, but I sell less ebooks than anything. I sell more print and audio. I don't know why,
but on the print books, you have to pay for postage, right? You're having to mail them to people.
Yeah, but media mail is fairly
It is
inexpensive.
pretty
So
cheap, a couple bucks,
yeah.
$3 for a book.
Yeah, as long as it's United States. Although every once in a while, I do get somebody who wants one, even though the postage is insane out of the country. Every once in a while, that happens, but which is kind of, I find that funny. It costs more to ship it than the book.
So, do you charge your readers the shipping?
Yeah. Well, in the United States, I include it because it's so cheap. Outside of the country, you have to pay for the shipping, because that varies by where exactly it's getting shipped to.
So, question: what has been the most surprising facet of writing? What surprised you the most when you started doing this?
Well, just that anybody would read my books.
That you could gain an audience?
Because again, this was never, well, number one, I never intended to write a book. So just the fact that a what was meant as me writing my thoughts down, because I just was complaining because no one was listening to me and I just was frustrated, turned into a book, which then sold really well despite the fact that everybody said it wouldn't because it wasn't marketable. And now I have four. What?
And still going.
I'm still going. I'm working on number five now, which I'm doing a no-no. Instead of finishing the current series I'm on, I'm jumping to a new series. I'm going to finish this series, Broken Road series, eventually. But I just got so excited for a new project that I'm starting a new series, and I'm halfway through the book that will finish Broken Roads, but I couldn't wait any longer. So I'm starting on a new series, and then I'm going to publish that book and then finish Broken Roads.
Well, you're going to tell us a little bit about your new series, right? Because you look pretty excited about it.
Oh, I'm super excited. I'm having so much fun with this series.
Okay, so tell me about it.
So it doesn't have a name yet, and the first book doesn't even have a name yet, and it's almost done, and it really needs a name, but okay, yeah. We're all good. So I'm adopted, which is something I didn't used to tell anybody about, really, because, well, yeah, okay, I'm in my 50s. Adoption used to be a shameful thing no one talked about, right? Which now it's not, which is really cool. Anyways, so through DNA, I found my father.
Oh, really?
And my sister.
Wait, 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 wait. Don't they have to be their DNA run in order for you to match?
I found a cousin who was like, wait, what? No, you can't be my cousin. Nobody in my family gave up a child. So then she connected me with her uncle, who is kind of the family historian. And that uncle turned out to be my father.
Well, okay, wait. So how did you connect with a cousin? I mean, how did you make that initial connection?
Through DNA testing on 23andMe.
Okay. I was going to say that it comes from somewhere.
Yes. So then my father, like a year later, finally told my half-sister that he had been contacted by me. It took him a year to get up the courage to tell his other child that I existed. And it turns out my sister lives less than an hour from me in Florida.
Wow. Well, so your father, did he know of you?
He knew I existed in theory. However, he didn't know exactly where I was because, well, again, adoption was a shameful thing and there was no connection whatsoever once a child was given up. And so he's kind of been dreading this for like 50 something years that I might just pop up. And so, yeah. And so my sister was just like, what? I have a sister.
Okay. What about
she had no idea.
What about your mom?
I haven't found my mom yet.
Does he know? I mean, he would know who the mom is, though, right?
He knows who she is, but he has had no connection with her whatsoever since before I was born. He broke up
Wow.
with her. There's been no connection.
Does he have a name, though? A name to
I have
start?
A name. I'm trying to find the woman.
Okay, so your story is all inspired by this incredible...
So my story is inspired by this. So I'm writing this beautiful story about this man who gets his girlfriend pregnant in college, and instead of dealing with the baby, he ghosts her and volunteers to go to Vietnam in the 60s. And
oh, wow.
Because he decides, well, fighting communism is a good thing, but then he gets to Vietnam and realizes that that isn't what the war is. What they're saying in the news in America, what they're talking about in America is not what it is. He's a medic in Vietnam and discovers that most of these patients are not soldiers. They're women, they're children, they're old people. This is not what it is. And then he gets injured, he gets sent home. And instead of returning to his hometown, facing this woman, he got pregnant. He cannot deal with what's called a moral injury, because of course his morals are damaged because of the war and what he saw, the horrors he saw being a medic. He just decides to go somewhere else, pretend he was never in Vietnam, and just start a new life. And part of that is marrying another woman very quickly, having a child who ends up being less than 2 years younger than his other child from this other woman, and then just creating this whole life and pretending none of that other stuff happened.
So he lives in denial.
Huh?
He lives in denial.
He lives in denial, which is common from Vietnam vets. Having worked with the homeless, I've heard a few of these similar stories. Sure. So yeah, we're seeing
the
connection
it the man's?
Here.
So you're writing it from a man's point of view?
I'm writing it from a man's point of view, which is unusual for me. We're kind of going off women's fiction right now. Yeah, we're writing it from the man's point of view. And so then all these years later, he gets whacked because all of a sudden he gets this email from this girl, woman, who, well, women, because she's 50 now, saying, hey, I think you're my father.
Wow.
And he can't deal with it. So he ends up in a bar and starts sharing his story to the bartender. And so, yeah, you see this slowly evolve where he slowly shares his whole story with the bartender. And you see this whole issue where he's just explaining exactly what went on and his whole thought process for why for 50 years he's been living a lie.
Wow.
So, yeah. So
powerful.
I'm really excited about this. And while it's not exactly my story, and it's not exactly my father's story, and it's certainly not exactly some of the stories I've heard working with homeless vets, it is plausible, and it is
realistic.
Yeah.
Is there a faith message in it?
What?
Is there a faith message in it?
There will be. Yes. And like I say, I'm really getting close to getting it ready to sending it over to my editor for the first draft. I'm really getting close. There's a few holes in it right now. I'm still doing some research with some Vietnam vets and some medics. I'm going to be going to Fort Sam Houston soon to talk to them because that's where the medics trained before going to Nam. So there's a lot of research involved in this one to make sure that the history is correct, make sure the feelings are correct. But I'm really excited about this project because I want to honor Vietnam vets because most of them were not honored, which is where the moral injury comes in. Because part of that is when they came home, they were not treated well and they were not given the care and love that they deserved. Anyways, so there's a lot involved in this and I'm very excited about this project.
I can tell, I can see it in your face. For those of you who can't see her, I can see the excitement in her face. If you can't hear it in her voice.
This is a tough project to tackle on many levels, but it is going, if I do it well, I think it's going to be a wonderful book. And that is going to be the challenge, is to do it justice, because there's a lot of moving parts here with his first relationship with the woman he leaves, with the whole Vietnam piece, and then with the piece with him getting back. So yeah, there's a lot of moving parts here, but I'm having lots of fun just digging into this subject and making sure that it's done well.
Well, I'm excited for you. It sounds like an awesome book, and I'm sure you'll do it justice. I'm sure you. It's nice that you have such a clear voice of what you need to talk about and the issues that are in the world that so many people will sweep under the carpet, and you're willing to put them out there. And I think it will move hearts. And it'll touch people in a way that maybe change their thinking some, which is what we need, don't we?
Well, yeah. And this is why I wrote the first book, is to try to change some hearts and minds. And that's why I keep writing. So I thought, yeah, let's tackle another big project before all those Vietnam vets are no longer with us. So
awesome. Well, Lee, it's been a wonderful chatting with you. Believe it or not, our time is about up. It feels like it's been, see, this is why I keep a timer. It feels like it's been 10 minutes and it's been like 34. So,
oh my goodness.
I know.
Yeah, like I say, you get me talking, I will talk your ear off.
Well, it's been wonderful. And I'm excited that maybe when you get that book finished up and you want to come back on and talk about it, we'd love to hear about it. And in the meanwhile, we will make sure that we have in the show notes how you all can connect with Lee on her website, where you're going to find a lot of her stuff, her blog, her audiobooks, her YouTube channel, a connection yep. there too, right? And your newsletter.
Yeah, you can find everything on my website, leelincolnauthor.com. It's Lee, L-E-I-G-H, Lincoln, L-I-N-C-O-L-N, author.com.
Well, I'll put that in the show notes so they don't have to really remember that.
Remember
they,
that, yeah, because my name is spelled weird.
They can just click on it. So okay. I'll put all that in the show notes. I'll put your Amazon author page in there for them to connect. And so it has been a pleasure. I hope this is a blessing for you, and I hope you have a wonderful week. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
This was fun.
Good. Okay.